We're back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being with some regularity these days, by Russ Dallin. He is a remarkable resource for those of us here at Secure Freedom Radio, among other reasons, because he is the president and editor-in-chief of the Latin America Herald Tribune. He is also a financial maven of the First Order with Caracas Capital, and a man who has been called to testify recently before the House Foreign Affairs Committee on developments in the region that we're interested in talking with him about, Latin America, of course, but specifically Venezuela. Russ Dallin, welcome back. So good to have you.
Thank you, Secretary Gaffney. It's always informative and always a pleasure.
Well, informative is because you bring a lot to the party. So let me ask you about some developments in the past few days in Venezuela that bespeak a regime of Nicolas Maduro in serious trouble. There is, of course, escalating inflation to which he has responded with a number of concessions, even as the price of oil makes meeting them seem more and more unlikely. Talk a little bit about what's going on economically, Russ, in Venezuela.
Well, in a word, if you had to describe it in one word, it would be mess, or disaster might be even more appropriate. The president has decreed the second minimum wage increase of the year. That's how fast inflation is growing. And he's increased the basic wage that most of the country lives on by 60% for the second time in this year, which sadly brings the basic wage to, according to what the black market would fetch, less than $15 a month, not an hour or a day. That's $15 a month. And that's why the population is starving.
And inflation is growing, and the price of oil is continuing, at least of Venezuelan oil, is continuing to decline. Russ, this would seem to make the Venezuelan situation not simply a mess, but, you know, formula for collapse. Is that what we're seeing happening at the moment?
Absolutely, Frank. It just continues to get worse and worse. I mean, not only is 82% of the population now living in poverty, and you can imagine if the basic wage of the population is less than $15 a month, even with the raise they got today, that's just not even enough to keep up with inflation. At the same time, you're right, oil prices are down, but not so much. The problem is that their production has fallen to under 2 million barrels a day, and they've already promised a lot of that production and borrowed against it. So they're really receiving no dollars.
In the face of the starvation of many of the people in Venezuela, Russ Dallin, quite a number of them have taken to the streets. Some have been killed there. What we're hearing more and more of is a chorus of criticism of the regime from outside, notably the Organization of American States, and now I guess the Pope has weighed in. Russ, to the extent that any of these outside inputs have any impact at all, do you anticipate that, for example, the withdrawal of Venezuela from the Organization of American States is going to signal essentially the regime's indifference to such cries and perpetuation of its abuse of its own people?
You're absolutely spot on, Frank. The worrying thing about Venezuela's withdrawal from the Organization of American States, which was trying to push Venezuela back on the path for democracy, to get it to hold elections again instead of the one vote, one time practice, which they fell into after 2015, after the government lost control of the National Assembly. The government has been afraid to go to elections, any kind of elections, since then. As the Organization of American States, the regional body of 35 countries of Latin America and the Caribbean, including Canada and Mexico and the U.S. and the North American region, was trying to push Venezuela, nudge it back on towards the path for democracy to have those things. But rather than fight that criticism, Venezuela decided to take its marbles and go home.
What of the developments on the ground in Venezuela in response, I guess, to continuing nationalization of foreign companies has been the withdrawal from Venezuela of General Motors, which, as I understand it, was manufacturing cars there. Is that now, again, a further indication that the economy is in a death spiral?
General Motors joins a long line of American companies, and indeed they don't have to be all American, but international companies that have been expropriated by the regime. I don't know what the regime hoped to get by taking General Motors plants. It's not very much. They're not very much good without the General Motors parts to make a car. But for General Motors' perspective, they weren't making that many cars anyway, because there's no one can afford to buy new cars when you're making, you know, less than $15 a month. For Ford and GM, Venezuela, in the history of the last 40 years, Venezuela had been one of their most important profit centers. They'd sold the most cars there. It was a leading builder all across Latin America. But under Hugo Chavez and now Maduro, it just destroyed its capability to earn foreign exchange to pay for all the pieces that you need to make a car in modern society. And you need dollars, and Venezuela hasn't been able to produce those.
Let me ask you about one other story, Russ. We've been talking in recent weeks about the possibility, as you say, that the Venezuelans have mortgaged themselves to the hilt by, among other things, giving people access to their energy sector's assets, including Citgo, a company that owns three refineries in the United States, oil and gas pipelines, and export terminals and the like. To the extent that you can sort of assess what's going on with that and remind us of the implications for the United States, stitch into this story the fact that the Trump inaugural committee received a gift of $500,000 from Citgo. Is that likely, do you think, to have a bearing on its evaluation of the advisability of this Citgo deal if the Russians wind up being the principal beneficiaries of owning Citgo?
Well, there's so much that goes into that, but let's just put it this way, that the Venezuelan government mortgaged half of Citgo to the Russians for $1.5 billion. Shortly thereafter, they got that money. They gave $500,000 to the election for the inauguration commission for Donald Trump. All the while railing against imperialism in the United States, they handed over twice as much as Pepsi to the inaugural committee. Now, whether that was Russian money or Venezuelan money or both, in a country that 82% of the people are starving and below the poverty line, $500,000 is a lot of money, and could have fed, at $10 a month, that's you know, 5,000 people that won't have any money this month.
Yeah, well, or more, as the case may be. Let me just ask you, in terms of a quick assessment, do you think this will bear on the Trump administration's willingness to take a critical look at the national security liabilities, implications, at the very least, of having the Russians own a big piece of the U.S. energy sector?
It's come to their attention after our testimony. Both the House as well as the Senate have asked Steve Mnuchin to investigate. As Steve Mnuchin is Secretary of Treasury and head of CFIUS, the Commission on Foreign Investment in the United States, which reviews all the national security implications of foreign investment, to look into the Citgo transaction, specifically the Russian involvement. I mean, remember that Rosneft has been sanctioned by the Office of the Treasury. U.S. companies are forbidden to do business with it.
We'll be watching it closely, as I know will you, at the Latin American Herald Tribune. Russ Stalin, thank you so much for joining us and for your insights on all of these issues and the importance they have for us here in the United States, not just for the people of Venezuela. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.